Hello, fellow travelers, and welcome to the Traverse of the Stars podcast. Today's special guest is Patrick Gallo. You know him as the editor and producer of the Ghost Adventure series. He now appears in The Offer on Paramount Plus. Now come join me as we go traversing the stars. Hello, Mr. Gallo. Thank you for coming to the Traverse of the Stars podcast.
Thank you for having me.
It's totally my pleasure, sir. I always like to start off with a question of inspiration, so let's jump in. What inspired you to become an actor, and who were your earliest influences?
Oh, wow. What inspired me to become an actor was I did a musical in high school called Cabaret. I was sort of pushed into it by a teacher who, I don't know, just seemed to think that it would be a good fit for me. And I never looked back. After I did that show, I was like, this is it for me. You know, this is an amazing feeling. And so I'm still doing it to this day. Early influences, I would have to say, I mean, Stanley Kubrick is both an early influence and a current influence and an always influence. Mm. Martin Scorsese, if we're talking actors, Burt Lancaster was a big influence on me when I was a kid. So there's so many that I could talk about, but when I think about Burt Lancaster, that was the kind of actor, when I discovered I wanted to be an actor, that I really wanted to be. He's such a genuine organic. I mean, you just always felt like he was just exactly where he was and honest. And so I would leave it at Burt Lancaster for the moment.
You know, I think it was really cool that it was a teacher who encouraged you to get into acting, because sometimes we don't realize that it really can be just one person who has that level of impact on another. And I think that's fantastic.
Yeah. And there were many people like along the way, but there was, one in particular that just kind of pushed me toward it.
I think that's awesome. So you're also a graduate of the American Musical and Dramatic Academy in New York City, where you studied acting, musical theater, and dance. Wow, that's a lot of different areas. So you studied all three. You're in dance, music, and acting?
Yes, yeah. And then every sort of element of that, you know, we had film classes, voice production and speech, different kinds of movement classes, Alexander technique, like, I mean, the whole spectrum, you know, of performance, you know, we covered in some way, yeah.
So how do they relate to one another? I mean, how did dancing connect you learning how to act?
Well, I think it's all just sort of being vulnerable to the craft, and being open, and to dance helps you. If you're open to learning how to, you know, become a ballet dancer, you're going to be open to, you know, analyzing a script in a different way. Or, you know, if you're watching a great film, you're going to look at your craft a different way. I think everything kind of, you know, affected every single other element. And it's also just a way for you to be with other people and to be going through all these very different things that are actually all in the same family, you know? So dance was a wonderful, my dance teachers probably wouldn't agree. Although I really tried very hard. One of my dance teachers said to me once, I think to me, like, I love dancing and I respected everything about it, but it was all kind of a bit to me. It was all sort of like material for me to kind of find humor in, not making fun of the craft, but just you're in moments, and I couldn't help it. I've always been that way. And I think there was a dance teacher that I had that got so upset with me one day in class. And he said to me, he said, "Mr. Gallo, one day you will make a great tree."
That is awesome.
And I remember being like, and I was like very much like, I'm just having a ball. But I remember walking home down Broadway with my friends that day, and I was like devastated, you know, like, what does that mean? Why would right. he say it? You know what I'm saying? And by the way, he ended up being my favorite teacher. At the end of this of going there, we had an amazing conversation, and he ended up being like one of the biggest inspirations to me.
Well, tough yeah. love, I guess it does have its value. I'm saying, I mean, it does help.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, that's great. Like that idea of the tough love, that sometimes you do need to hear that. Once you did get being told that you make a great tree, how long did it take you to brush yourself off and get back up off the mat and keep going?
Oh, not terribly long. There were so many different things happening in school, scenes that we were working on and songs that we were working on and, you know, things that we were working on outside of class and performances. I mean, it didn't take long, but, you know, it hit me pretty hard in a weird way. You know, it's one of those moments where you're like, you know, hey, I make everyone laugh. And then, you know, teacher kind of cuts you down. You go, well, that really hurt my soul a little bit unexpectedly, you know?
So when you were, when you entered the American Musical and Dramatic Academy, obviously you went in to become an actor. That's why you went. Did you immediately buy into the fact that dance and musical theater was going to help you, or did you have to be sold on it and eventually buy in?
No, I loved it. I felt very honored that I was even able to partake. You know, I knew that it was all a part of performance, and I was so honored that I was able to like study dance and study music and learn more about music than I had known. And I was surrounded by a lot of kids that were like, you know, raised on musical theater and lived it. And so when it was presented to me, I fell in love with it. And I fell in love with Stephen Sondheim, you know, and to this day, this is another one of my, you know, hugest influences. And I owe that to my time in New York, to studying musical theater, and of course dance as well, Hanya Holmes, and all of these things that I just, coming from where I came from, I wasn't exposed to it. And then I was, and it's like being exposed to, it's being exposed to great art that you didn't know existed. So very thankful and very honored that I was able to become a part of that, even though it was a bit of a struggle for me, you know, tap dancing and ballet and history of dance and modern. But you know, I was there. I was always there.
Were you naturally introverted or extroverted?
I think I was a little more introverted when I was a child. And I think that, I was pretty, pretty introverted, pretty insecure. But skateboarding came into my life at around 13. And that I always attribute to a major shift in my personality. Like that gave me a lot of confidence. I loved it. It gave me a personality. It gave me sort of an independent freedom to be who I wanted to be and to not worry about what people thought about me, which I was feeling that way before skateboarding. And so it was a great freedom. And I talk about it often. And so, yeah, I attribute my personality shift. And now I think I'm a little more extroverted, but I can also be pretty, you know, pretty introverted and pretty deep and dark. If I want to be, but you know, I'm sure I come off very gregarious and
you do a very good job of that.
Listen, you'll find me weeping in a corner. You might, it's not out of the question that I would just be shivering and weeping in a corner, you know.
So all these years later, do you go but think back to that high school teacher that encouraged you to get into acting and think, what did he or she see in you that thought this person probably could be doing this?
Yeah, I don't really think about it in the way of like, what did they see in me? I think it's curious that they saw something in me. There was other people they could have sort of focused on. And I guess, you know, it was my personality that was attractive to this particular teacher. I don't know. But I often think about the moment that, you know, I was off stage left before I entered stage for the very first time with the audience, and remember making that decision as I look through the little window with, you know, chicken wire inside the glass, and saw all the audience, you know, with all their eyes focused on stage. And I thought, wow, it was very magical. I think about it all the time.
Well, apparently the teacher made a very good call, because you've had it in a very impressive career. You were an editor and a producer also on the very successful Ghost Adventure series. So how do you get involved in Ghost Adventures?
Still am. Yes, absolutely. I balance it all out, man. I love that. It's a great gig. I love it. I love making, you know, really dark horror. I love it. I come from a comedy world, but, you know, it's all comedy and horror are unbelievably similar in so many ways, timing wise. And so I've been on that for 5 years. I love it. I love it.
So what do you think has been the reason why that show has been so successful for so many years?
Ghost Adventures?
Yes.
Well, I think that it's got an incredible fan base. I mean, it's got an unbelievably dedicated fan base. I think the paranormal genre itself is massive. And Ghost Adventures, you know, was really like, you know, a pioneer in the show and that kind of show and that genre and the docu-reality, gritty, investigative paranormal world. They're pretty much, you know, Zach, you know, really put the flag in that, you know, a long time ago, and everybody kind of followed. I think what makes it successful continually is that Zach and the cast and all of us that produce and edit and direct the show and all really care about making a good show for our audience. And so, you know, that reads.
Prior to getting involved with Ghost Adventures, were you a believer in the paranormal, and has the show made you a believer?
No, I think I've pretty much been the same the whole time. I've never not believed it. I'm always open to experiences. I would love to be, a chosen one, but I've never had a reason to not believe it. And I've always been open to it. You know, I feel that there are other things in the world for sure. And I don't know what those things are, but like I said, I'm never one that's going to say it's absolutely not possible. I believe energies are in this world and we can't see them all. And however they, you know, sort of surface, you know, who knows? I think it's all a mystery. It's still a great mystery.
So what do you think are the primary misconceptions some people may have about a show like Ghost Adventures? And how does the show, do you think, kind of alleviate those misconceptions?
Well, I think it's just a matter of, like, you know, what you like. You know, some people just go, oh, it's not a good show, I don't watch it, because they're not into the paranormal. And then someone who's into paranormal loves it. It's just a matter of taste. That's all that it is.
I mean, it must be kind of cool to be on the forefront of trying to get or trying to help people believe in the paranormal, or at least try to create the conversation.
Yeah. I think that, like, whatever you believe in, if it makes you feel good and it makes you feel, you know, and you feel that you have an honest draw to that thing, then connect to it. You know, I don't see any crime in that whatsoever. You know, if you believe it, then it's true, you know, and that's, you know, and I think just to sort of steer it back to acting, I mean, that's what it is. You know, it's just, you know, believing what it is you're doing, believing in what it is you're expressing and the context around it. It's just a belief. It's a momentary belief and a truth. Now, whether that, you know, be acting or it be something that you believe in, it comes from the same place, you know.
Does editing something like Ghost Adventures teach you the power of editing? So when you're acting, is there something that you're realizing that, or the impact of editing would have on a particular performance?
No, I really, the two don't ever really see each other. I mean, it's a complete gear switch. And it doesn't, one never gets in the way of the other. If I'm editing, that's what I'm completely channeled into editing. And when I'm acting, I have no thoughts of editing whatsoever. I mean, they are very different. You know, I mean, they're both crafts and they're both art, but they don't ever seem to see each other, you know?
Mm. Yeah. So one cool thing that you're doing right now is that you're playing Mario Puzo, if I got the last name right, Puzo, in the miniseries, The Offer on Paramount Plus. Mm-hmm. And for those who know Mario Puzo, he's famous, you know, the Godfather. Also Superman, I believe, as well. He did the script for.
Absolutely.
So how do you get involved in The Offer? And what excited you about being in this miniseries?
Well, I auditioned and was glad to know that, you know, I got through to the end and I was chosen by the studio and producers and the writers and the director to embody as best as possible Mario Puzo. So it was a wonderful moment. And incredibly exciting project to be a part of. You know, the making of The Godfather. I mean, what a unique story to tell.
Mm.
So really, and your curiosity about how that process is going to go, you know, so it's unlike other projects I've ever worked on because of these connections, you know, because we all love The Godfather. It's in greatest American, you know, film ever made in my mind, in many people's minds. So, you know, to tell a story that's related to it, as a love letter to that film, and to play Mario Puzo, you know, who wrote the novel and co-wrote the screenplay, it's a joy. I feel very grateful. It was a beautiful experience. It still is right now. You know,
is this the first time you played a character that was a living person?
Well, he's not alive, but you mean was?
Was, yeah.
I think it is. Yeah, it is. It is my very first time, yes.
Does that impact how you approach a role, knowing that there's a definite, I mean, there has to be footage of the real version of him, there has to be aspects of him that we all have seen and known. Does that affect how you approach doing the role?
Yeah, I mean, I think you make a decision and you're going to decide either you're going to work really, really hard at doing an impersonation or you're not, or you're going to do a variation. And I felt drawn to doing a variation to, you know, read interview transcripts and watch interviews and watch him and read his work. And that was really it. You know, the work, all of his work was really the roadmap that I thought would be the way to find his essence, you know, and who he really was. And he really was a true, true artist and deeply passionate about his work. He wasn't really about the mainstream or about kind of writing these things that he would call fluff to, you know, to make money or draw fame near. Although he did that with The Godfather, and he did it intentionally with The Godfather. So, but yes, through his work was where I wanted to find his essence. And then through my performance, I would hope that it would come through, that his truth and feelings on art and passion would come through.
Is there added pressure to know that when you're playing, once again, Mario Puzo, who once again, like we said, was alive, that people who knew him are going to be watching this? Does that add pressure? Is it something that you're able to just kind of push aside and just focus on the work?
I mean, very, you know, a little bit, not much though. You know, listen, my other castmates have that kind of, you know, little bits maybe of that anxiety. You know, I mean, Francis Ford Coppola, my buddy, you know, Danny, Francis is alive, you know what I mean? Like, Anthony Bellito playing Pacino. You know, there's so many others that are alive. And those are much bigger shoes to fill than I had to fill, because not many people are like overly aware of Puzo's personality and how he was as compared to like Pacino and Coppola. So my shoes were much smaller to fill than Dan and Anthony. You know, those are, you know, they had a hell of a job and they did a spectacular job at it. But, you know.
Yeah. Well, what was it like acting against, you know, the people performing as Pacino, and then you have obviously Coppola. Did they, you know, was there a question of whether or not they're also inhabiting, doing a variation or an impersonation? And
yeah, well, it's to answer that question, it's never the feeling of being against another performer, and it doesn't matter whether they're doing if they're deciding to do an impersonation or a variation. It doesn't really matter because at the end of the day, you're just there trying to find the truth in the scene. So, and you're working together, you know, nobody's trying to like outplay another person. Everyone's sitting there going like, you and I, or you and us have to create this energy so that this scene can be elevated and it can be, you know, have all the layers and the dynamics that we're looking for, you know? So it's such a beautiful ensemble. It's such a beautiful community. And everyone is just trying to work together for that same goal, you know? So it doesn't really matter what process is sort of being executed. Because at the end of the day, we're just kind of, you're there and you're just trying to find the truth of the scene.
Yeah. And you know, and as you say, Godfather is one of the great films in American history. I mean, yeah. The first one, I mean, even the second one. So hopefully, I don't know if this will be a sequel. We talk about you're going to do the second one at some point. But is what insights into the movie, the original movie, did you get from being in this miniseries? And did it help enhance the next viewing of The Godfather? When you watch it again, knowing, well, there's this stuff probably happening in the background. Does it make it enhance it, make it more interesting?
No, I mean, not necessarily. I mean, the only things that it sort of brought out was my excitement of like watching certain scenes in the film and thinking about the fact that, oh, we have the scene where me and Dan are talking about writing this scene like that. You know, you just experience it in a slightly different way because like there's some elements in the film that we're talking about because we're writing the screenplay. So that's like a cool different way to see the film. It didn't change anything really overall. You know, that's the beautiful thing about The Godfather. Like it's just it hits you the same way every time, but you feel like you've never seen it before. That's how hard it hits you. And I told someone once that I've seen The Godfather 1,000 times. Many people can share that. But that every time I watch the scene with Sonny at the toll booth, I know exactly what's going to happen. And yet there's this little tiny thing inside of me that says, maybe this time it won't.
Mm. I totally agree with you on that one.
Yeah, because it just breaks your heart. And you just go, I just want to see him pay the toll and go through. Why can't he just? So yeah, you know, it's definitely a very special film. That can hold on to its core and soul, and you can see it 1,000 times, and every time you see it, you feel like you've never seen it before.
You know, I think I really like that you said that, because there's something truly wonderful about a movie or, you know, or TV or whatever, that you know it's fiction, but there is part of your brain that goes, you know, that's every time you watch it, go, well, maybe he'll survive. You know, like, you really do feel that way, yeah. Or, you know, maybe something will change. He's like, well, they didn't remake the movie, but you in your head, you still kind of. You know, you feel nervous and apprehensive. You're just like, come on, man, just this time, one time.
Yeah,
you
know? Yeah.
Movies are a wonderful thing like that. Especially, I mean, the purely great ones.
Yeah. Oh, you said it. You said it.
So also in this movie, you had Miles Teller and Matthew Good, who are also phenomenal actors. What was the experience of having these actors in the movie? What did they bring to the set? What did everyone kind of do to make this movie feel, or this miniseries feel special?
Well, I mean, everybody just loves what they do. You really only need to bring kindness and commitment, you know, to the set and coolness, which follows, you know what I mean? So that was it, you know, the craft, the kindness and the coolness. And that was it. These guys, you know, and Juno and Nora and, you know, and Stephanie, you know, these are, and Miles and Matthew and Giovanni and Kami, I'm going to name the whole cat, Burn. They love, like I said, they love their craft. They love telling stories. Mm. And so it's an automatic. As soon as you're with them, you know that everybody's here to do what they do. And everybody's here to tell the story the best that they can. They care about it and they treat it delicately and they take it seriously. And it's a beautiful energy to be around all the time, you know, because everybody cares about what they're doing. It's unbeatable to be in an ensemble where everyone cares so much about what's happening and what they're doing. And every one of them, by the way, is grateful to be able to do it. You know, to be working, to tell a story, you know, it's a really wonderful gift to be an artist and be able to share that with other artists. And this entire cast was that way, top to bottom, every single. And I mean, I'm talking cast, I'm talking crew.
Yeah.
You know, PAs to the president. Of Paramount Plus. I mean, that and everything in between was wonderful, beautiful people. So I mean, you're not going to run into many, you know, issues at that point that are going to be sort of unsavory. You're just going to be having a good time and feeling supported. It's great.
I mean, the offer it sounds like a fantastic ministry. I do look forward to coming out on April 28th, right? April 28th is
April 28th. Yeah.
It also sounds like a movie that could be kind of heavy. Was there something, I mean, how did you guys lay the mood, or was it, you know, kind of just somber?
Oh, no. I mean, I think it has its moments for sure. I mean, it does have its moments. I think in the episodes that I'm in 6 of 10 episodes, I think in those episodes, you know, I'm there to provide a little bit of comic relief and a little bit of lightness. But there's a lot of that with Miles. There's a lot of tongue-in-cheek stuff going on with Miles and Francis and Juno, and you know, so you know, it does a nice little dance, you know. It's a nice balance, you know, of humor and darkness. So and you know, I think that's, you credit to Michael Tolkien and Russell and Nikki, you know, for writing that kind of script.
So
having that kind of balance to it, and yeah.
So I mean, once again, everyone loves The Godfather, but once again, as we mentioned earlier, Godfather 2 is often considered at the same level as Godfather the first one. I mean, it's a seminal movie. Is there discussions of doing a second miniseries about the second Godfather movie?
No, nothing that I have ever heard.
Okay.
So, and I would tell you if I did, but I have heard nothing.
Well, when this becomes a huge hit on Paramount Plus, make sure you get back to me about the sequel, Godfather 2.
You'll be the first person I call, man. I'll be clicking the Zoom. It'll be expired, but I'll still be clicking the Zoom. Hey, you know, come on, answer. They're going to do it.
And, you know, and I think the great thing about Paramount Plus and streaming is that, once again, it gives you, from my understanding, more freedom to make the shows that you want to make. You're not as constrained by, obviously, network limitations.
Yeah, absolutely. So,
I mean, can you feel, is there a different feel to doing a streaming, something like streaming platform type show?
Yeah. I mean, you absolutely, you know, you don't feel that the sort of the pressure of the restrictive television landscape that used to exist, right? Where it was like, this is the model, this is the format. If you step out of this format, we don't want it. We won't even look at it. We won't read it. You know, there was all of that. There was a lot of rules and regulations. And so I think with streaming, I think there's much more creative freedom and they're taking risks. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but they're taking the risk and they're making shows and they're putting money behind people that have a different voice. It's a wonderful thing. And like I said, and I don't care if a lot don't work and only a few do. The fact that they're giving other people chances to like speak in a different voice and say things in a different way, like that wasn't happening in TV.
Right.
As it was. And I think that streaming in that way has opened those doors to people going, you know what? This is a crazy idea.
Right, right.
Let's just give it a shot. I mean, that wasn't happening. So that's exciting. That's really exciting.
I mean, I think so. How many episodes is The Offer?
Ten
episodes. Are the episodes shot like television or are they shot like film?
Like we shot it like a film.
Oh, wow. Okay. Wow.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because that's high production. I mean, films are very high production. And what I've seen of it looks high production.
It's Paramount Plus, man. They wanted to, you know, they really wanted to give the show everything it needed, you know? I mean, it's Godfather. You know what I mean? Like, that's the subject matter.
Right.
There wasn't much, you know, like, I don't know if we can give you that. They're like, what do you need? And let's do it. So they're unbelievable. I mean, it's their show. They're so supportive of it. And they believed in it. I don't think there was a lot of, like, should we be doing this? It was, we want to be doing this. What do we need to do? And they committed to that. And, you know, really, really gave us an amazing environment to work in.
Well, I can't wait to watch The Offer, like I said, on April 28th on Paramount Plus.
Yeah.
What's next for you?
Now that I'm about to work on another episode of Ghost Adventures, which is very always exciting. I've been doing it for 5 years and it's always super fun and I love to do it. And I don't know what else is going to be. Listen, man, you know how it goes. It's like that, dude. It changes like that. So I don't know, but I look forward to talking to you again and telling you what that mystery thing that's hanging around somewhere is going to, when it presents itself, I'll let you know. Maybe it's, you know, who knows?
Hopefully it's The Offer too. That's what I'm shooting for. So when it's ready, come back on the show. Talk to me about it. You're awesome, sir. And it's a pleasure to talk The Offer with you.
Hey, great talking to you too, buddy. Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me. Thanks a lot, too, buddy.